Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for the Baseball Prospectus local blog on the quickly cratering Chicago White Sox. Hosting today from Elkhart is me, James Segan. I'm joined by whatever title I gave Ethan Spaulding from suburban Chicago.
I think I'm just a staff writer.
Staff writer.
And stat specialist or something like that. That's what I put on my resume, that I'm a stat specialist at Baseball Prospectus.
Our special guest today is Mauricio Rubio from 2080.
He's very special.
Yeah, it's very unusual to have him on this podcast or talk to him in any fashion.
You haven't had me on in a while. Why is that?
Because you left BP.
Oh, yeah. That'll happen.
I mean, I was kind of particularly motivated for today because, you know, with L Tree playing tonight, there's not really, you never really know if you're going to come out okay on the other side of that.
You were trying to schedule this for the fucking Mexico game. I know that. I know you.
I just say, like, it makes for good, you know, listening to you, like, on the edge. Like, one man fighting a battle for his own sanity.
It's never good. Pre-game for Mexico games is always terrible for me. I have two beers waiting for me in the fridge. I have a lot of tequila somewhere. And I am going to be imbibing in that and hurting on Monday. So,
don't you work tomorrow morning?
I sure do. Real early in the morning, too.
All right, well, good times. You can find this podcast on our website. You can also find our... we're not on Podbean anymore. We are on Blog Talk Radio. Search for The Catbird Speaks. And also on iTunes. Subscribe so that you don't have to wait out our really uneven recording schedule. We are in the wake of somewhat major news. James Shields became a member of the Chicago White Sox just yesterday in exchange for site favorite Eric Johnson and Fernando Tatis Jr. Mao, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think it's we're starting to smell a little bit of desperation out of this White Sox organization that kind of found themselves coming out to a hot start, and as everything seems to be falling apart in terms of performance and I guess the luck differential, especially for, you know, the kinds of games that they were winning early in the season. You can definitely see that they need to add a couple of things. Pitching was an interesting one. I think pitching was definitely a place of need, considering the starts that Matt Latos has been giving to the White Sox lately. But I still think they have a couple of holes that they have to patch up. And to be honest with you, it's going to be very difficult to overcome it, all of it, if Jose Abreu never really comes back around.
That's an interesting idea for an article.
The Sox still have a plus 10 run differential, which is
amazing. Yeah.
Like, considering how bad... It's insane that it's still over 500. It's a testament to how good they were to start the year.
Right.
I mean, I think what's weird... This is such a weird sequencing to get... Humans obviously have a recency bias. The White Sox have obviously completely cratered in the last, what? It's like 3 weeks now. They were 23-10 on the morning of my birthday when I turned 21. And they have... I should probably sue them for contributing to alcoholism because they are, since I turned 21, they have gone 6-18.
That's, you know, one out of every four. That's solid.
Yeah, that's okay.
They have one out of every four. That's a .250 winning percentage, which is lower than the Twins have on the season.
So here's my question. Have they won back-to-back games? I feel like they haven't.
Yes, they won back-to-back with the Mets.
Okay. Does it count? They actually won
back-to-back against the Indians and Royals, like, before everything totally went to shit. Now they've lost 9 straight to AL Central teams. But if not for the weird sequencing, 29-28, 2.5 out of first, 2 behind a Royals team that's completely in shambles, they still haven't gotten anything from Abreu, which, even if he's somewhat cooked, he's probably not going to be this for the rest of the year. The only real overperformers on this team are Sale and Quintana, which isn't really surprising. Like, it wouldn't shock me if Sale held his ERA for the rest of the year and if Quintana was a little bit above this for the rest of the year. And they're adding James Shields. So they're not in a terrible position. It's really not an awful position.
Mauricio, you called this kind of like desperation, and I definitely think that was probably an impetus. But I guess I would argue that this is kind of an improvement that was you could have seen them needing a good while ago. Possibly even preseason.
For sure. I just don't think that James Shields would have necessarily been the target, as I think was clearly evidenced by the kinds of players that they were signing in the preseason or even when they were 29-10. Because I don't think that they make the move for James Shields if they're still kind of on the upswing. They kind of go for a little bit of a different target or might even go for an outfielder or for offense over pitching.
I think that they went for Shields, though, because that's what's available. Like, they undoubtedly need to improve the offense. They're not – even if Abreu comes back, I'm hard-pressed to see them catching Cleveland. Cleveland is, in my opinion, a really solid team, and I have a hard time seeing them, like, really catching Cleveland if they don't improve the offense. Like, but James Shields is out there, and an upgrade's an upgrade. You're still – pretty significantly upgrading the roster by I think Latos is the worst pitcher of Miguel Gonzalez and Latos, but Gonzalez is getting bumped. But I think you're upgrading the bullpen by having Gonzalez. I think he's a guy that you can throw in. He's a guy who can make it so you don't give 34 fucking pitches to Matt Albers in a 2-run game yesterday or whatever, or that so Tommy Conley is not your guy out of the bullpen to keep it close or whatever. But so, in that sense, like, the James Shields thing upgrades, and he's who's out there right now. The Brewers, like, a lot of these teams are going to really want to wait for the deadline for their players to have the peak value when everyone's looking to trade for guys. Like, the Reds are trying, Jay Bruce is available before the year, but now that Jay Bruce is hitting, the Reds are probably asking for a lot, and they have no reason. Everyone knows they're going to trade Bruce, but they have no reason why they really need to trade him right now. They could just wait till the deadline, assuming they don't think he's going to completely crater like he did last year. And the same is true about targets like Ryan Braun or Carlos Gonzalez. And those guys are going to cost a lot. Those guys are going to cost Tim Anderson. Carlos Gonzalez cost Tim Anderson. Carlos Gonzalez is also a perfect fit for this team. So that becomes an interesting question. The Sox need to make a trade like that, I think. Maybe Bruce helps. Bruce helps a lot. Bruce gives you another guy who you can trust to hit for power and get on base, and like then you're not.
I don't know about getting on base.
Well, this year he's gotten on base again. He's at 330 on base percentage. I think he would
it's
be
like
second.
It's 320. On like it's fine. It would definitely be fine for this lineup.
I didn't realize his walk rate had completely cratered this year too.
I wouldn't count it as like his attribute or what he's gonna like.
It's funny that
9.1 walk rate. It's
I feel like we talked about Jay Bruce in the preseason, right? Like didn't we have a discussion about like how weird his entire season has been? Like his 2015 season was.
His 2015 both his last two seasons are extremely weird because he was really good in the first half and then totally tanked.
Okay.
And I think last year it was an injury, and it might have been an injury the year before. Yeah, last year he was hitting 251 or. Last year at the All-Star break, he had a 115 weighted run created plus, and in the second with a 12.2% walk rate and home runs, he had like a 214 ISO, so like a legit power hitter, 806 OPS, and he totally tanked after the All-Star break, as did Frazier, interestingly enough. If Frazier tanks, the season's over. Like that can't happen. Then again, Todd Frazier's also probably going to – if he keeps hitting power like this, I don't think he's going to have as low – he's not striking out. Todd Frazier is leading the major leagues in home runs and has a 193 BABIP.
That's pretty hard to do.
His ISO is 281 and his BABIP is 192. That doesn't happen.
No. I mean, I think that you could still certainly point at things that this White Sox team needs, especially a lot of consistency coming from their offense. The James Shields trade, like I was trying to figure this out when Sale and Quintana were very, very hot, and what kind of winning percentages you would need out of your fourth and fifth starters in order to win, 88, 89 games. And I think it came away with something slightly below 500. So if James Shields can come in here and provide you more reliable innings than what Matt Latos has been supplying you, because I don't think Latos survives his rotation. I think eventually that they go back to Miguel Gonzalez because I can't see them tolerating the kind of stuff that he's throwing out there on a nightly basis for much longer. If you kind of get a little bit of a better version of Shields than what he was in San Diego, like I think that kind of helps you get back on track from a pitching standpoint. But that offense needs it needs one more bat, I think. And you could probably make the argument it needs two. So
it's really jarring how much, like, obviously Melky hasn't been a stud this year, mm-hmm. but just even losing one guy from that offense makes it go from maybe it's passable and you can win a game to holy shit, this is awful. Like, yeah, you probably have, let's say you trust Abreu right now. You probably have, what, three or four hitters that you can at all trust in the lineup that they just ran out there against Detroit. You can trust Frazier. He's good. Eaton has been in the slow streak, but he's still Adam Eaton. Lurie has hit pretty well all year, and I think he's a solid player. But, like, that's a league-average player at Lurie. And then everyone else in that lineup is not just a little below average, terrible. Mm-hmm. Saladino's never going to hit for you. The catching platoon is awful. Rollins isn't going to hit for you, and he's DH-ing. J.B. Shuck, Jason Coates. Jason Coates is a 4A player, as is J.B. Shuck. Avisel Garcia has made a living hitting massive home runs off mistake pitches this year, but you can't make a living as a starter doing that.
That's not a first division starter.
It's not a second division starter. It's a nice bench bat. They need to make a
trade.
It'd
be more interesting if he wasn't like a DH and awful corner outfielder.
Yep. His routes today were really special. Like, just can't believe what I'm watching special. And we got, like, Austin Jackson isn't good. Austin Jackson at least has a chance to reach base. I don't feel any confidence in J.B. Shuck reaching base.
Right.
I don't have any confidence in Jerry Sands reaching base.
Was it this year in spring training when everyone was on J.B. Shuck?
I think it was like last year during the regular season when he was hitting pretty well.
He was a good pinch hitter for some odd reason.
Some guys thrive in that situation. Some guys do really well with...
Yeah, but it was like 20 PAs all year.
Yeah, it's not really a firm sample to draw from, but I mean...
He hit 266, 340, 350. 350 slugging in 165 plate appearances last year.
It was like a little bit up as a pinch hitter, but like there's the Peter principle, and then there's like thinking a guy who hit like 290 and 50.
He was
PAs.
A negative war player last year, and people thought he was useful.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, in a way, kinda. Like, in his very specific, tiny role.
I don't know, man. I think a lot of people gravitates towards guys who do well in small samples because they only see the successes, right? So it's like, I think making the connection between getting this guy more exposure to, you know, major league stuff will hurt him.
It's just like, it was so tiny. It was like,
right.
Man, the janitor really did a number on the bathroom. How do you think he'd do running the company for like a month?
Right. Did you just call J.B. Shuck a janitor? Is that what you did?
Janitor baseball Shuck.
That was bad. That was really bad. That's almost as bad as your bar selection for your birthday.
I thought I was being mean to him, but that's really cruel.
So, after today... In terms of players with more than 100 PAs, the White Sox have all of three players with a league average bat or more. That's as bad as last year. They have Todd Frazier at 117, Eaton at 104, down to 104 from 130 like a couple weeks ago, and Melky at 100, and Lurie at 99. This offense, like, it looks the same as it was last year. And it's not. It should be better, but it's not.
It's definitely at a crater point. As far as the trade, my opinion kind of the return is that it's pretty much nothing.
Mm.
Like, I don't know. Johnson, like, he can't... There's no use to him being in AAA anymore. And he can't really, like, fight for a spot in this rotation. I kind of think, like, a team like San Diego can just punt, like... The year can give him consistent starts to see if he finds something.
He could be Clayton Richard for San Diego like 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, he's addicted to home runs, so maybe Pecco will help, but I'm not sweating like losing him like one bit.
Right.
No, I mean, anyone who thinks he's a big league starter or whatever, like off what he's been this, like, hasn't watched him since 2013. He's never shown anything since 2013 that would suggest he's a quality major league starter. His stuff has totally regressed. He can't locate the fastball. There's all his off speeds kind of meshed, like blend together. He's got like a loopy slider that doesn't do anything. He's got a loopy changeup that doesn't do everything. And he just gives up a bunch of dingers. Like, and he can't get people out on the fastball. The fastball's at 89 with a little bit of life. It's not a major league pitcher.
No. No. The other kid that they gave up, Fernando Tatis Jr., that's a guy that might not even be a contributor for the Padres during Preller's tenure as GM. You know, it's not to say that Preller's on the hot seat or anything, but, like, that guy's light years away. I mean, you know, he's got ability to hit, right? Like, and he's going to be able to play a couple different positions. I think he's got the arm for third. Not necessarily I don't think he's going to stick it short. You could even probably play right, depending on how the athleticism fills out. I know he's probably an average runner right now. I haven't read too much on him lately. But, you know, that's not a guy that you sweat about giving up.
No. Not at all. I mean, like, you're giving up a lottery ticket to get a major league starter. Like,
you do that every time.
You're trying to win in Chris Sale. Like, you have your core now. You have this strong core of Sale, Eaton, Quintana, Abreu, and they're, like, theoretically should be, some of them are, like, in the middle or have already had a couple of their peak years, but theoretically the next 2 years should overlap with those guys, Frazier's peak, and I mean, Frazier's a free agent after next year. So you're giving up, and Shields is now joining that group, the group of players that's going to be under contract for there. You're giving up a guy in Tatis who... He might be a really good player someday, but if he is, the point when he's a really good player is probably when Chris Sale's contract is up.
Yeah.
Like, it's a completely different era. It's an era that, yeah, the White Sox should build for, especially if they're not going to win now, but it's one that you are okay giving up a low probability, potentially high upside guy.
I don't know if he wasn't really marketed as high upside. He's kind of like a maybe 45-50 guy if he, like, pans out.
Yeah, I think you're looking more towards the defensive contributions. The tricky part is where he's going to play defense, right? Because if he's a third baseman, then he's really got to hit because you can't really think of many utility third basemen. Like the guy you immediately go to is Gordon Beckham, right? And how'd that work out?
Tyler Saladino.
Yeah, baby. So it's like, you know, you really got to hit at third. But if he's more, you know, second base, center field, right field, can pinch it at like third base, you know, that kind of expands out the profile and it gives him more of a chance to be a major league contributor, you know, long term. You know, just to give a little bit of background on Fernando Tatis Jr., like he signed for, I believe, $825,000 July 2 in 2015. This is a Dominican kid. You know, he's 17 right now. He's years away. You know what I mean? And even when he reaches his peak, which it's extreme risk. There's a lot of unknown here because the developmental path is just so long for him that, you know, you don't know when he's going to be able to contribute. And even at peak, it's probably looking like an average regular. So, you know, it's just not a lot to give up.
And as we said, Eric Johnson sucks ass.
Oh, he's bad. He's very
like, so you're basically saving. San Diego is not going to win in the James Shields era. And there's not many teams that had an extreme. The White Sox had about as big of a need as for James Shields as there could have been because of how bad the back end of the rotation is. Like, you have 2 to 3 guys who, if Rodon's not on, you have 3 guys in your rotation who you don't really count on as giving you a chance to win every time out. And now the bridge from, say, like, now once you get through Sale and Quintana, the bridge till you loop back to them is not nearly as rough of a go, especially if you start getting stuff out of Rodon. And, right. Like, at this point it looks like, oh man, I kind of wish we had Aaron Nola right now. But, I mean,
that
I'm not...
That boy's a bad motherfucker.
I'm not going to fault the Sox for taking Rodon over Nola. Yeah. But Nola's a really nice pitcher. And Rodon is struggling. He's very much struggling. And I don't know. So someday, if Rodon goes on, like, for all we know, Rodon could go on a 10-start stretch tomorrow where he just destroys worlds. Like, it could happen. It could just randomly click. But it's – at least Shields now gives you a little bit of hedging against that. If Rodon continues to struggle, you don't have three starters in a row where it's just like, oh shit, let's hope the offense gives us 6 runs tonight.
Right, right, exactly. That's all you want. That's all you want.
And they're paying him to be that guy too. It's not like they're taking on the whole contract. They're giving him $27 million over 3 years. Like, I think he's a better pitcher than Ian Kennedy right now. Ian Kennedy got $70 million.
Do you think people still think that 27 over 3 is a lot of money?
Yes.
Okay.
People do. Jerry probably does.
Jerry probably absolutely thought he paid a lot for Jim Shield.
Yeah, he's probably going to say, oh, look at me. I'm so generous.
I'm putting myself out on a limb for you, Ricky.
It's quite the thing right there. Because it's just not in baseball money, which is one of the weirder things to kind of get a grasp on. Hey, I think, look, like, the more it's gone along.
Jay Bruce homered today.
Oh, did he? Yeah. What's he like? I feel like he's doing really, really well, right? Like you talked about that a little bit, Ethan.
He's a mid-800s OPS.
That's pretty good for him. Nice moat. Nice bike. Nice bike.
I'm riding.
I think he would have the highest weighted run created plus on the White Sox right now.
That's not good.
Yeah.
That's
not at all.
Yeah.
He's slugging 591. He's up in the 900s.
Oh.
Oh, Jesus. That's even better than I thought he was.
He's got a 311 ISO right now.
That's a lot.
That's even higher than Todd Frazier. Jesus.
It's higher than a lot of folks.
Is it leading baseball?
It's got to be, right?
He's got five fucking triples this year somehow.
How? He's a statue.
I don't know. Have you heard anything about a lot of outfielders dying mid-play this year? Because I haven't.
Did they all come in one game? I don't, like, what the fuck is happening? Has he played in Colorado a lot? Is that what it is?
Are you watching Cincinnati games? I'm not.
Every once in a while I have to, because I like the feeling of my balls getting kicked.
All right, let's hear the top five in ISO this year. First place, David Ortiz.
Okay.
Second place, Adam fucking Duvall. Who has 16 home runs on the year. Third place is Yoenis Cespedes, who the White Sox could have. Jay Bruce is fourth at 311.
Yeah, Trumbo, let me see how my press credential is doing for next week.
Trumbo, there's an edit tool. Trumbo's fifth, Curry's sixth, Arenado seventh, Machado, Cano, Frazier.
I will say this on Yoenis Cespedes, and I don't mean to be, you know, Captain Loves the Owner guy, but heard a lot of things about the makeup that aren't necessarily as ideal as you want. And it's not just from one person. It's from a couple of different people. So it's like, you know, doesn't necessarily take the game part of it as seriously as he could.
Now, I don't give a shit if he's not taking the game seriously, if he's hitting fucking 15 home runs over a 50-game stretch, though. He's been like, I mean, I get it. And
yeah. It's a lot of money, is what I'm saying. Like, you would take that guy, depending on the contract, is what I'm saying.
This particular contract will not hurt the Mets. He's getting $30 million this year. He's going to opt out, and someone's going to give him too much money, and that person might get really hurt.
Right. That's the next contract. Yeah.
I do not want to sign you an assessment. I mean, he's the best option on the market, and if that's the last piece, you might have to do it. But this particular contract, but I don't know if he signs this contract with anyone but the Mets, because I think those particular makeup concerns probably made him like New York quite a bit.
Right.
So.
Oh. That's a great little clubhouse they have down in Flushing. Just.
Hey, at least he's actually performing, unlike Matt Harvey.
I want them to win the World Series so bad, just so I can watch the 30 by 30 on this game.
It's the 86 Mets.
It would be the best of all time. Like, I would just love it so much. I'm actually somewhat rooting for the Mets.
It'd be really funny if they beat the Cubs again.
I would probably log off of Twitter for a very long time if they beat the Cubs again.
It'd be really funny if they just bash the Cubs' skull in. Like, Cespedes goes Manny Ramirez on them. And
no, like, that'd be like too much like true talent early in the day. I want like Kevin Plawecki to hit like 4 home runs.
Right. For no reason.
Like, I'm rooting for the Cubs, but I'm also kind of rooting for the funniest way the Cubs could Cubs it up. Like, it'd be cool if the Cubs win a World Series. Like, I have a lot of friends who are Cubs fans. My mom's a Cubs fan. My brothers are Cubs fans. Basically saying I have black friends, but about the Cubs.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Jesus.
I'm not a Cubs hater. It's like the guy who says I'm not a racist, but I have black friends. I'm not a
you
Cubs
did it again.
I'm not a Cubs hater. I have Cubs fans. So I don't wish doom and gloom on them necessarily, but there are certain scenarios that would be quite entertaining.
I actually agree with most of what you said.
which part stood out as the exception?
I'm just going to let that be ambiguous.
Draft's coming up this month.
Sure is. It's coming up next week, actually. It's June 9th.
Is this a bad draft, or is that just something people throw out when they don't love the top three guys or don't know who this clear number one is?
It's a weird draft, not extraordinarily deep, so I think you're going to have a little bit of difficulty even in the second round. But I think the closer and closer we get to the draft, I think the more you realize that, you know, there are some guys specifically in the top 10, you know, even at 10 where the White Sox will be picking that can be major league contributors, which is all you really want out of a draft. Like, yeah, I think we kind of run into this problem where, you know, you're looking over the draft and you're looking over at years past, and this has been kind of, it's become worse since the Strasburg and Bryce Harper drafts, where it's like, there's not this heavy amount of...
Well, the Bryce Harper draft might be the best draft of all time.
Right, and we got spoiled.
Between Harper and Machado and Sale.
Yeah, we got spoiled silly out of that draft, right? Because it's just like, all-star, 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 all-star.
Those might be three Hall of Famers. They're all on Hall of Fame career paths.
Yeah, that's an insane draft. And, you know, now you compare every draft to that draft and it looks like garbage. Like, it's just, you know, there's kind of not a lot of ways around it. But, yeah, I certainly think there are a lot of players out of this draft that I think they're going to be solid major league guys.
So is this a bad or still fine draft to have punted free agency to load up picks on?
This is a fine draft to punt.
Not to cut off Mao, who obviously knows more about the draft than me, but the thing with that is I know a lot of what Kylie was doing, Kylie McDaniel with Fangraphs then, now with the Braves, was doing was he was pointing out that when we talk about the quality of a draft, we're generally talking about the top 15 guys in the draft. Mm-hmm. And what having that extra pick does, it doesn't really, like, you don't have an extra top 15 pick. You have an extra 20, like, you have an extra pick late and or late in the first round, which really the most important thing there is money. And what you can do with, like, the ideal scenario probably ends up with you doing something like what the Cubs would do, is they get a strong first round pick at the top of the first round, but they use that extra money. They get an underslot guy early, and they use that extra money to just throughout the draft take a bunch of lottery tickets, take guys that you just have extra money so you can get more quality prospects. The last couple of years, the Sox have signed, especially the last 2 years, for two slightly different reasons, the Sox have not been able to do that at all. In 2013, they drafted Rodon third overall, and he just ate up their entire pool. And they took Spencer Adams, who was also considered a first-round talent, in the second round. And that took up almost all of their cap money. And you do that because you're getting Rodon and Spencer Adams. They're very good prospects. Last year, you don't have a second or third round pick, so you have your first round bonus money. But even after that, even if you get Carson Fulmer to sign under slot, and they didn't, you don't have really any money to spend elsewhere. This year, if you get an underslot guy in the first round, maybe an overslot guy in the second round, you have an opportunity to spend a lot of money and just acquire talent in the later rounds, like actual major league players, not a bunch of college senior signs, which is how they've basically been operating in the late rounds in the past couple of years.
Right. I mean, that's spot on analysis right there. And I think that going back to James's question, who's clearly in Indiana, judging by all the motorcycles.
This is the mayor's office I'm in.
Oh, you are? Oh, yeah. Is he riding?
City councilmen are just popping wheelies around me.
I believe it. Elkhart, Indiana. That's what you guys do. I think if you really wanted to punt in this draft, like what the Cubs did, especially in the first two rounds, and they're going to be picking in the third at like 104, that would have been fine. But I think the White Sox have two pretty strong opportunities to get, you know, some pretty strong players. They pick at 10, and I think they pick at 24?
26.
26. There we go. So, yeah, man. It's a good draft.
I just think that because of what we said at the top 15 thing, every draft is a good draft to do what the Sox could do in this draft. Because you're almost always going to have prep players who you can get in later rounds. For example, a guy like Cease with the Cubs a couple years ago, who's now trying to, like, if you just get an accumulation of those types, the Sox have literally never been able to do that in the draft.
Right.
Because for a while it was just Jerry didn't care about the draft, and now it's just because of the nature of the last two drafts. Now you have an actual opportunity to get more than one or two prospects. The Sox got one actual prospect and only a couple lottery tickets. Like, they got one Corey Zingari who's a lottery ticket. Like, that guy might work out, but when you only have one, it's a very low chance that that works out. But if you hedge your bets, if you have three or four Corey Zingaris, one of them might work out. One of them might be the next Kyle Schwarber.
Right, and I think that, you know, especially where the
what are you doing?
That was an inside joke.
Yeah. That just threw me off track. No, I think that when you're picking where the White Sox are as well, like what you're looking for, you know, especially in the top 10, the smart strategy is to go for, you know, as sure a bet as you can secure. You know, I think a lot of people started jumping on the high school right-hander, you know, Riley Pint, really early on in the draft. And he was getting 1-1 buzz for a long time. What you always see with drafts is that as the closer you get to the draft, the more the high-risk high school arms, especially high school right-handed guys, fall. Because these guys are picking, you know, in situations where they have to secure job security. And if they fuck up a first round pick, especially 1-1, like that could end it real quick, right? Especially if you mess up, you know, your first three picks in a draft, that could end it really quick. So, you know, the closer and closer you get to draft time, the more, you know, scouting directors and general managers get involved. The more these guys like Riley Pint and, you know, even Tyler Kolek, who should not have gone at 3 or at 2. Did he go 2? He went 2.
Yeah, he went 2.
Like, they fall off the board, you know, quicker because these guys, these general managers and these scouting directors, they've been burned by these profiles and they've seen this profile and they're like, I don't want to take a risk on that guy because the hit rate is so low. You know, I had a guy tell me the other day that he doesn't think he would take a high school right-hander in the first round at all. You know, and I can certainly see the reasoning behind it because if you look at the history of high school right-handers who get taken in the first round, it's bad. You know, the hit rate is just astronomically low. Yeah, there are a couple of guys who do hit, and when they hit, it's pretty good. But on aggregate, when you're looking at the entire history of the draft, it's not a good history. So, you know, I think that at 10, the White Sox are probably going to be looking at securing up someone like, you know, maybe even a Zach Collins, you know, someone that they believe has a high floor and a high probability of contributing soon. And then they can start taking those high school arms or some of the arms that are a little bit more risky, or some of the players that have a little bit more risk associated with them, you know, because you want to make sure that you secure something out of the draft first, and then you start kind of gambling out from that.
And what Kyle Schwarber's ascension to, like, super prospect and actual major league producer kind of obscures is that when he was drafted 1-4 behind Rodon, it was a very different strategy, and the White Sox were going with Rodon. The Cubs picked him because he wasn't considered one of the top prospects in that draft. He was considered a guy who could hit, come to the majors fast and hit if he didn't stick a catcher, but a guy that wasn't a $5-6 million player. And that, so the Cubs got him for an underslot deal, had a bunch of money left over, and the fact that he turned into a super prospect was just gravy. If he had just been like a solid hitter, that's what they were expecting to draft out of him. Like, just a guy, like a guy who breaches the majors kind of quickly and gives you solid production. He obviously blew that away, but that's what you can do. That kind of pick, if the White Sox did, the White Sox might be going for a similar pick with a guy like Collins. It's not fair to put a Schwarber comp on Collins now because of what happened with Schwarber, but Collins is probably not going to eat the entire first round, the 110 bonus with that 10th slot. and then hopefully you have more money to spend elsewhere.
Right, that's the only comp that really matters, right, is what the type of profile that both of these players have. You know, Collins has fringy defensive ability at catcher and is not going to stick there. It doesn't look like he will, not at a full-time spot. But he's got some bat-to-ball ability, and he's got a little bit of power. So it's like, you know, if you get him and you get him under slot and you get him, you know, you get him for a deal that allows you to move the money around, you know, that's all you want to do. And I think that's why people put the Kyle Schwarber comp on him. It's not necessarily that he's going to be Kyle Schwarber. I mean, that's just silly to do, to throw a comp to Kyle Schwarber on anybody. It's just how the draft is going to work for them.
Is that how you really think? I mean, is there anyone else that they're being linked to strongly at this point?
I mean, there's a couple of different guys that they're being linked to, you know, a couple of different arms. I heard Matt Manning, but I don't really put a lot of stock in it.
Isn't that guy supposed to have a $5 million price tag or more?
God damn it, Jamaica.
What did Jamaica do?
They fucked up is what they did.
he does. You know, Matt Manning's got a lot of ability. He's high risk at 10, you know, but he's not going to make it to where they pick a 26, so it depends on what they really want to do. You know, there's a couple of guys, you know, that a little bit closer to 26. I know Buddy Reed is someone who's fallen off a lot because he didn't produce at college at all. But if you get him at 26, I think that's a fine pick as well. You know, it depends on what they want to do, really.
What do you think of Gavin Lux, who I've heard, who Callis linked to them in his latest mock draft? He had them taking Corey Ray first, which would be a really cool pick, and then Lux at 26. But they're said to be high on Lux. And Callis mentioned in his mock that if Ray doesn't fall, they could take Lux under slot at 10, and just because they really like him.
I have a couple of questions on Ray, but you know, since you're asking about Lux, I'll focus on him. I saw him at the Super 60, and I've talked to a couple of people about him since then. You know, this is a kid who's got a lot of hand-eye coordination, is very fast, you know, professional hands at short. I think he probably moves over to second base over in the long term, but he's got some hitterish ability. He's got contact skills, and, you know, he's shown a lot of growth from, you know, which is expected, but it's always nice to see from last year to this year. So I think that at 26, it might be a little high, but I can certainly see the reasoning behind picking Lux at 26. It's just not necessarily a pick I would make.
So definitely not a 10 then for him.
Nah, I don't know about him at 10. I think that's aggressive, and I think if he goes at 10, it's going to be surprising. Let's compare mocks from like yesterday to like mocks from like 2 weeks ago and see how different they are. Right?
It
like,
changed so fast.
It's just it like every single little bit of information can change a lot. So,
last year the only constant in every mock draft was the Sox always got Fulmer, but. Other than that, like if you look at the mock drafts last year, like the first overall pick changed like seemingly by the week because no one knew what the Diamondbacks were doing, and they ended up with Dansby, who they traded, and then everything fell after that. People had Daz Cameron originally a top 5 pick; he fell to 30 because of bonus demands. The draft just changes so fast, and like you said, like people end up making deals before the year or before the draft, and it can change so much depending on who's like makes what under the table deal before right. The draft starts.
Right. And that type of stuff changes everything. There's probably a top 5 pick out there who's already got a deal set on stone or, yeah, it's such a different animal. And I think that anybody watching baseball is used to that, like, it can change literally from day to day. So, like, today you hear something, and then tomorrow you have to completely change around your mock draft because it, you know, if any one thing, like, let's say, you know, AJ Puck is considered to be the, you know, almost a consensus 1-1 at this point. You know, tomorrow, let's say, yeah, it comes out that, you know, they like going with Kyle Lewis instead. That completely alters draft boards a lot, and you have to go back and you have to alter your entire mock. So it's, you know, whatever the Phillies do at 1, has very deep ripple effects for what happens in the direct aftermath. And, you know, from that, it affects what happens way further down the list in ways that are very curious.
If the Sox drafted higher, Puck seems like their dream kind of pitcher, just a college lefty with premium stuff and seems like he's got a big body and stuff like that.
They would try to make him stand tall, though, which I am very curious to see how that would work.
That doesn't seem like his thing right now.
No, he gets very low in his delivery. It's you know, he's 6'7", but he pitches like he's a lot shorter than that.
That sounds like a huge diss when you say that. I don't know if you're aware of it, but it comes off very badly.
I know it does. I got to shoot it straight, man. Got to shoot it straight. But he comes in at a little bit of a lower slot than I think what the White Sox would be looking for in a pitcher. But if they did get him by some strange chance, I would be very curious to see what to do with him. Whether or not they would learn from Samardzija and just kind of let him be, or if they would try to alter his delivery and make him stand taller.
I mean, maybe learn from Samardzija, but I feel like they'd be more likely to like learn from that in terms of dealing with a veteran who's like had success than a college guy.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that doesn't seem like where their rigidity is going to give away.
Yeah. It's a surprisingly rigid philosophy they have with when it comes to pitching. You know, it's worked out like considerably well, but when it doesn't work out, it works out. It fails very loudly.
They also got, it's some time ago, and many, many, many mocks ago, they were associated with Hudson. Is that something you still think is on the radar?
I think Dakota Hudson is certainly a pitcher that they would target as well. I think that when you're looking at what the White Sox are looking for, it's mainly going to be college pitching. But Dakota Hudson certainly does fit that profile. I actually kind of do like it at 10. You know, I don't think that's, you know, I think that's actually be a pretty good pick. I think the Zach Collins thing really resonates with me because of what it allows him to do after that pick. You know, especially at 26, then they can start to kind of be a little bit more aggressive with how they draft. But you know, Dakota Hudson at 10, yeah, that works out great. He's 6'5". He's got big stuff too. So it's I think that would work out really well. Cutter guy, Dakota Hudson.
Oh my God! So he's out on the Orioles, huh?
Totally out on the Orioles. They would scrap the cutter, and then he would get traded to the Cubs and win a Cy Young.
Is there anyone we haven't talked about you think could play a role at 26 later in the first round?
There's a couple of different guys. I think that you do kind of have to look at guys like Eric Lauer. He's the left-hander out of Kent State. You know, this is he throws in the 90 to 92 range. You know, the velocity has been ticking up a little bit. I think he was 80 to 90 a little bit earlier. But he's got a pretty, you know, it's a pretty loose delivery, which is what you like to see. And you know, it's pretty good. I've mentioned Buddy Reed. I think that's someone that could be in play at 26. You know, I think Lux at 10 is very aggressive. I think Lux at 26 is aggressive, but I think it would be the good kind of aggressive, just kind of considering his profile. And then there's a couple of other guys that can't really get into. But just leave it at that.
With a guy like Lauer, is that a guy you? I mean, he's a college lefty. Is that a guy you think they'd move fast from? He seems like a lower upside kind of pick that they'd probably want to move fast. I don't know. I think that you'll also get Steve Stone talking about him every time.
Steve Stone will love him. Eric Lauer. Yeah, because I think that you know that's a guy who will be a first fast mover throughout their system. They really love pushing their prospects aggressively. What do they do with their low A team? Is that where all the Dominicans go? Because I feel like every time I look up that roster, it's like zero prospects.
Is that Winston-Salem?
Like, I believe that is Winston-Salem. It's like, why do you even have a team, man? Like, nobody ever goes there.
Well, I think part of that is probably the fact that for so long they had no reputation in the Dominican. Yeah. So I think that's what... Right now they have... They have Spencer Adams on that roster, who's probably dead. So, but I think a lot of it was because of that whole like the no international pipeline coming through. Yeah. Oh, but with Salem's high A. They don't have a low A team, right?
Kannapolis, really? I thought. Kannapolis.
Oh yeah, Kannapolis. Right.
That's where Craig's boy Zach Thompson's killing it.
God damn, they don't send anyone to Kannapolis. I think that's correct. I think Tim Anderson skipped low A, if I remember that right.
Let's see. They had Johan Cruz is there, who had a reputation of being like somewhat of a fast riser, and they got Zangari there. And Adolfo's there. So I
imagine Zangari being higher than that right now.
I think like I said about the lack of Dominican talent coming in, and particularly Dominican, but international talent in general, I think that that's probably why you haven't seen good prospects there, because they get college guys in the draft who have no reason to ever go to Kannapolis. And they get, so without 16 and 17 year old signees coming out of the Dominican, you just don't really have anyone worth playing. So you end up putting your 24 year olds, their entire pitching staff looks like it was guys born who are older than me, which usually isn't good. Like,
not a good sign for low A.
Actually, they don't have a single. They have one guy younger than me in their low A on their low A pitching staff.
Although you're 21, it's not that crazy. It's just it's not.
The point is like, yeah, there it could, like it would make sense for some like, wait, let me. They don't all have to be under 21. 21's a normal age to be at low A, but the fact that. Every single guy on this roster looks like 23, 24. Those guys, you don't see many real prospects who are still in low A at 24. Though Zach Thompson, who is Craig's guy, who we have wrote up a couple of times, he seems like a guy who's taken a little bit of a step forward. He's still in low A, and he's dominating there, but that's still a long way off, and that's a weird profile because his fastball just kind of went up a couple ticks, and he's seen performance jump because of it.
He's next Jake Petrichka. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Boy, Micker Adolfo and Corey Zangari just getting their ass beat low A.
What's right?
Micker hitting 197 right now.
How is he striking out in less than a third of his plate appearances?
That is incorrect. He's got 25 strikeouts and 61 at bats, which seems bad.
38.5% strikeout rate.
Cool. That's 290. Cool. Not 295 slugging. So, that's their raw power playing up.
That's what you want. I thought he had below average bat speed, but a lot of raw. So I mean, the strikeouts are.
Adolfo's K rate is 38.5. Over would you guys take over or under on Zangari's strikeout rate relative 38.5? Does Zangari have lower or higher?
He's got lower, but it's not going to be much prettier. I can tell you,
it's higher. In AAA, it's higher right now. Or in low A, it's higher right now. He's at 42%.
Yeah, that is not great.
Jamaica right now is down 1-0 to Venezuela, playing with 10 men, and one of the defenders took a crossing pass in the beans. So that's kind of like a good visual representation of how Zangari is doing.
When are you going to commit ritualistic suicide in response to this game?
About 65 minutes or so.
Okay. Wow, it's early and they're playing 10 men that much time left? Jesus! What happened?
We're not a very cool-headed country. It's hot and we're hot. That's kind of how it goes.
Explains a lot about you, my man.
Guys, Cleo Lully Rondon has a 95 weighted run created plus in low A.
He's killing
it. I feel like he's been there for 5 years.
He got two games in at Triple A last year because they like their shortstop died or something.
Oh, that's right.
In the minors, he has never hit above 250. Oh, no, he hit 276 in 2013 in low A. But, oh, he got up to high A this year, though.
Oh, he's in Winston-Salem.
Okay. Yeah, and he has a 54 weighted run created plus and a 0.22 ISO.
There's a lot of garbage offense going on.
There was something we were going to talk about besides the White Sox getting Shields and the draft. What was it?
The White Sox team?
Was it that?
Were you going to ask me about prospects? Is that what it was?
Probably.
Oh, we were going to talk about Tim Anderson because Mal thinks he's a center fielder. He didn't even mention him on a shortstop prospect.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Everyone got mad. You know, they also got mad at us for not mentioning Willy Adames.
Hey, he's on my fantasy team.
Yeah, we think he's a third baseman. But, you know, we're...
Right?
What? Yeah, he's big.
Big, strong dude, right?
Yeah, he is. He's got big, thick legs. He's going to have a considerable amount of power. And he's got some bat to ball skills. Like it's not a plus hit, but if it's an average hit, you know, you could be talking about above average plus power. And you know, his defensive profile. The only reason he's not going to stick at short is probably because his lower half mobility is not going to allow him to stay there. You know, he's playing there right now, so he's got a shot. But if I had to put my money on it, I'd put him at third. You know, me and Witt, we are talking about doing a floater podcast where guys just kind of – guys that we haven't mentioned at certain positions because we don't necessarily want to put, you know, shortstop on a guy like Tim Anderson or Willy Adames. Like, you know, Anderson's profile, defensive profile, like it's he's got a ton of speed, but he doesn't necessarily use it as well as he could at short. And it kind of it does a weird thing with his range, and his hands aren't as secure as you want out of a top tier shortstop or even an average shortstop. So, you know, you can probably fake it over there, but it's a position where I think they need a lot of defensive help, and I just think that Anderson profiles. I think Anderson would help you a lot more as a center fielder than he would as a shortstop because he could be a really good center fielder.
So, what's really, the gap really between what you guys are assessing him as what his defensive future should be? And where you think the organization is actually pushing him toward? Because unless I'm wrong, I don't know if he's played a day in center field.
I don't think he has.
I don't think he's played a single game in the minors anywhere but short.
But short, which I think is the smart way to do it if you're an organization. Like, you just let that guy. You know, the same thing is happening with the Oakland Athletics and Franklin Barreto. You know, Barreto's got a very mixed opinion on what his defensive skill set is going to be. But I think one of the things that you want to look for, you know, this is kind of one of the reasons why I don't think Tim Anderson's coming up soon, is because, you know, the closer you get to a call-up, the more positional flexibility an organization will put on you usually. You know, we saw that with Kyle Schwarber and Chris Bryant with the Cubs when they were about
Bryant
to come up.
Too, after they pushed him back down. They
exactly.
Playing him all over the place.
Right. So you start to see some of the orgs start to kind of play them all over the place because, you know, you want to maximize the positional flexibility, especially with an athlete like Tim Anderson, who's got, you know, the kind of tools that he has. You know, you want to play him a little bit more. But you also want to give that guy, you want to make sure there's no chance that he can stick it short. Right. And even if there is a small chance, even if you are playing him at other positions, the primary position is going to be shortstop. So, you know, this is a kid.
Just look at who the Sox have in Oregon short. They really don't have a single out. Like, he's the savior at short right now. Like, mm-hmm. He needs to be there, or they need to pay money at short, or they're not going to get any production out of short.
Right.
Like, Saladino is there. They had a couple, like, there was that period of time when they had a couple of shortstop prospects, and it was like, all right, well, maybe one of those guys worked. And the guy that worked is the guy they traded in Marcus Semien. And, I mean, Semien's not a superstar.
Kind
of,
yeah.
They have a bunch of second base prospects, is what they had.
Yeah. Semien is exactly the player I thought he would be. Maybe a little bit better bat, but really not much. Like, And back to that, like, back to that trade, like, you don't regret that trade if Samardzija is who Samardzija was supposed to be, but he wasn't. So now you regret that trade because he'd be a big upgrade over Saladino right now. But because of his existence, you also got Brett Laurie for free, so who knows. But back to shortstops, you really don't have anyone in org who is going to play shortstop and give you production, who you could even think of giving production in the future. Tyler Saladino is your everyday shortstop right now with Rollins out. And below that, like, what other shortstop prospects are even in the org? Like
Rondon, who's hitting .217 right now.
Johan Cruz, who's 4 to 5 years away.
Right.
Like, you don't have a guy who's – you don't have a single player in this organization who could play shortstop other than Anderson.
Right.
In the future. Like, that's the only guy in the org who you want starting at shortstop in 2017.
Right, and they're playing Saladino over at short, and I don't necessarily think he's a great shortstop. So, you know, it's clear that they're willing to stretch it at defensively at short anyway. So
he's exceeded my expectations there, though.
He's
been a much better shortstop than, for one, any scouting report ever said he would be. Like, his arm has proved much, or his range has really been what's impressive, because I know when he was coming up, he was usually considered a low range shortstop, but his range is fine and his arm is strong. He's not Andrelton Simmons by any means, but I think he's at least an average shortstop. An average at the most premium position on the field isn't bad by any means.
Right.
He just
can't
hit.
Yeah, that's an issue when you can't. It's funny when guys like that kind of flip their prospect profile, because I thought Saladino could do a little bit with the stick, and I know a couple of other people did as well, but ended up being
Tyler Flowers. Everyone thinks you're a bat and you turn into a glove.
Like Matt Wieters, too.
Yeah. So. Well, I guess that happens with the catchers kind of often.
Yeah, catchers are weird. Catchers are the weirdest.
Top tier framer Mike Zunino.
Is he in the majors again? Or
no, he's hitting the shit out of the PCL.
That's good. He should continue to do that.
Didn't he get crazy rushed?
He did. Yep.
He was in the majors as a 22-year-old catcher.
Which is, that's a lot to throw at a 22-year-old.
And, like, he actually had a really solid year in 2014. He hit, 88 OPS plus for a 22-year-old, or 23-year-old starting every day at catcher. 22 home runs starting every day at catcher in that ballpark is pretty damn impressive. But once pitchers figured him out, he's just started striking out a lot, and the power stopped coming as much. And he went from, oh, this guy can hit a tiny bit, and he can field his position very well, to we can't roster this guy. Mm-mm. Right now, he is hitting 270, 350, 540 in the PCL. That's an 890 OPS, and oh, wait, I thought they had OPS plus for the minors. No, they don't. I'm on BREF. I thought it was going to say, like, in the PCL, 890 is a below average OPS, but
jeez, that I don't think that's right.
It's not. I was reading stats wrong. But, I mean, the PCL, if you look at teams, almost half the league in the PCL is averaging 5 runs per game.
It's a high-run environment.
It's 4.8. High-run. Hold on. The average OPS is 745 in the PCL.
So, best hitter on the White Sox.
Is that better than Frazier?
No.
No.
It's just not a good time.
Gallo's humor.
Wasn't the PCL just kind of a, as a tangent, wasn't the PCL kind of, when Syndergaard was kind of really struggling as a prospect, didn't people kind of say that it was because he'd be better off pitching in the major leagues where his stuff will actually break and he won't have problems with, like, low air environments than pitching in Vegas every day?
Yeah, pitching in Vegas is not a good thing for your health.
Like, you either want that guy in Double A or you want that guy in the majors.
Right. Certain guys, you don't want them to ever see Triple A, and that happens more often with pitchers than with hitters.
And especially in the PCL, I think.
Yeah, especially in the PCL. Like, I mean, Triple A in and of itself is just, it's sad. It's like it's rosters full of White Sox fans, basically. They're all bitter, angry. They don't want to be there, but you got to be there. It's just, it's bad.
And then there's Tim Anderson, who's like a really, like, he's just like a hotshot kid who seems like very friendly and gregarious.
Give him time.
if you ever have a chance, look at Filippo Paolino's photos from Major League Baseball, and then look at his Iowa Cubs photo from last year.
Paolino was with the Cubs last year?
I believe he was. Let me look this up real quick because the photo is very stark. It's very, yes, it is. Yes, he was.
His middle name is Adolfo.
Yep. So, like, there's a photo of Filippo Paolino from the Cleveland Indians where he's smiling and very happy.
Yeah.
And then last year with the Iowa Cubs, it looks like someone told him his cat died.
Oh my God! it looks like after before and after presidential pictures when they like look like they've gained 17 years in 8 years or whatever.
That's exactly what it looks like.
His beard is much grayer. His face looks weathered. His eyes look sad and dull.
Have you seen the picture of James Shields that they're using?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, the expression's like, you buying this shit? That's kind of like what I'm taking away from, like, seeing.
James Shields looks like he'd fit into Mao's classification of how a bunch of the AAA pitchers, or AAA players look like.
He does. That guy never looks happy.
I am a soccer observer, not an analyst,
mm-hmm.
but I think Jamaica would be better off if they had 11 men rather than 10. But their slow goal to murder every member of the Venezuelan team, I think, should pay dividends down the road. Let's conclude a note. What other additions do the Sox need to be looking at making down the stretch?
Need an outfielder. Need to not have Avisaíl García get meaningful plate appearances for as much as they're giving him right now.
Should they sign Carl Crawford?
No. Oh my God, he looks cooked.
Yeah, I know.
Cooked.
So add him to the team, right?
Yeah.
but he's not Jerry Sands.
I would rather have Jerry Sands over Carl
Jerry
Crawford,
Sands,
to be honest with you.
I'm pretty sure Sands' Pecota projections are better than Crawford's over the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think I would rather have Sands.
I think one interesting thing I've noted, like, in this whole... Sands is obviously fucking terrible.
Yeah.
But White Sox Twitter has been acting like Jason Coates is going to come up here as a 26-year-old AAA player and just suddenly, like... I do it because it's a risk. Sands is so bad that Coates' floor is probably the same as Sands.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not like...
His failure would be completely unsurprising.
Right.
It's expected.
And then Robin's hitting him fucking second in the lineup.
Coates hit second today?
Yeah!
Is that good? Is that good?
I thought when you said that, you know... play someone quad A guy who can't hit at second. I thought it just meant Saladino was hitting up there again.
No. They had runners on second and third with no outs going to the top of the lineup. Eaton, Iglesias robbed Eaton of a two-run single or something like that. And then Coates comes up and strikes out and has no chance against Justin Verlander. And then Abreu sucks too.
That's winning baseball right there. That's what you want. That is what you want. You know what happened is Adam Duvall came up and just, you know, hit a bunch of dingers. Now everybody thinks anybody can do it.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Why doesn't it ever happen to the Sox, though? The Sox never, except for Trace. Trace is the one guy it happened to.
But Trace is the Jesus. Trace is the man.
Trace might actually be really good.
Beige is beautiful, baby.
I tried telling you. Nobody wanted to listen. Everybody thought that was a fucking joke, too.
I did. I thought you were joking.
I mean, like, I got to the point last year, it's like, oh, well, maybe this guy could be a really nice fourth outfielder, a Chris Young type, who mashes lefties, plays good defense, and you probably don't want him starting as righties.
What?
I didn't think he was a fucking 350 OBP 570 slugging type, and I mean, he's obviously not that. He's obviously going to regress a bit. Pitchers will figure him out. He still has holes in his swing.
He walked three times and stole three bases last night.
I bet you he ends up, you know, around 330 OBP and like 480 to 500 slug. But that's fucking good.
That's fucking
good. Amazing.
That's fucking good. That dude has real power, man.
Also, this Jamaican midfielder just did something that's like 15 yards and maybe an injection in the NFL. And it went uncalled.
Yeah.
This is like a shoulder, like, to the head at full speed.
Oh, man.
And I still didn't do shit with it, even though that guy was dead.
We should watch that eventual Copa America match where we get the Jamaica-Mexico doubleheader again. I think it happens in a week, right?
I hope so. I don't want to last any longer than that.
I'm sorry, James. I'm sorry your team is bad.
Every team is bad.
No, that's not true. No.
Like,
which one of my teams are good?
The only team in Chicago that's been good that I've liked while I've liked them, the fucking Blackhawks. I don't give a shit about the Blackhawks. I don't give a shit about hockey. Like, the White Sox had the World Series when I was 10, so I didn't even really get to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And they've made the playoffs once since I've turned 13.
So what are you going to do when the Cubs win the World Series this year, is what I want to know. Are you going to be happy? Will you be really happy?
I'm going to be happy. I probably wouldn't be happy if I was living in Chicago. Yeah. But I'll be happy watching from Madison.
Because the thing is that I think, you know, kind of calling back to what you said earlier in the podcast, I think that hilarious loss thing happened last year. And I think that's it. I think we're in the era of the Cup now. So, you know.
People would have said, the thing is that, like, the playoffs are always such shit. Like, the reason why funny things like that happen is because the playoffs are a total crapshoot. Like, the Mariner, the 2001 Mariners lost in the playoffs. The fucking 06 Cardinals won 83 games and won a World Series.
Yeah.
They were hurt all year.
That's true, but they still won 83 games.
They had prime Albert Pujols.
The 2014 Giants were not a good team. Not at all. Like, they had Madison Bumgarner go fucking laser beam, destroy robot worlds or something. But they didn't, like, that team was not good. they won the fucking World Series. It, shit happens.
That's the benefit of having guys who can go laser beam Death World. Maybe carry a half-decent starter for once, Royals.
I'm pretty sure Chris Sale could do... If anyone could do it, it'd be Chris Sale, but also he might just implode, start throwing 97, like, missing by 3 feet in the playoffs.
Break I don't want to see that. Out. Nobody wants to see that.
It doesn't matter, though. We're never going to see a Chris Sale playoff start on the White Sox.
No, not on the White Sox. You'll probably see it with the Red Sox.
Jesus Christ.
Man, you're bad.
That's the real reason I got banned. I kept talking all that shit.
I'm not editing this thing anymore.
You can't get Xander anymore either.
Nah.
Like, I mean, Chris Sale and Xander Bogaerts probably match up relatively even on trade value, but why does anyone do that trade?
Nobody does that trade. Who cares? Like, I remember the Cubs and the Red Sox pulled off a trade, and Bogaerts was mentioned as the return. And I was like, oh, wow, that's a really good get for the Cubs, because it was just some pitcher, but it was the other Bogaerts. Not Xander.
Yeah. Xander is he's really special. I admit to being wrong on Mookie. I think that Mookie is going to – like, he's definitely blown away my expectations.
Did
I think
you call
he's gonna,
him the first time?
Mookie. It's Mookie.
Yeah, no, I called him Mookie. I wasn't alive for Mookie Wilson. I don't know exist like – Anyway, I was wrong about him, but I still take Bogaerts over him. Like a shortstop with plus defense who could just rake. That's MVP candidate, like yearly MVP candidate.
I never thought he'd be plus defense. Never thought it.
And, but he is, though, right?
He is. He's there. He's never just thought he'd get there.
Hopefully Timmy turns out really nice.
For another team.
Cardinals need a center fielder, right? Down the road?
Sure. Who do you want from that team, though? Well, it's kind of a dead team.
Probably Matt Adams and then have him die.
Yeah. Probably.
Do the Cardinals want to... Now that Aldames Diaz, or however you pronounce his
Aledmus.
Name. Aledmus.
Yeah.
Now that he's just a revelation... Will they give up? What are they going to do with Johnny Peralta when he comes back?
Probably trade him to the Mets.
Put him out to stud.
Why don't they trade him to us?
Because why do we want that?
Because we don't have a shortstop. We're starting Johnny.
You want to put Johnny Peralta in short?
Johnny Peralta has been good at short. Like he I know metrics aren't shit, but he like has like over the last few years like. Oh no, he was bad.
Johnny Peralta's range is what he falls down to get.
I know that's true. I don't disagree with you. Listen to his defensive run values from 2011 to 2014.
34.
16.7, 18.0, 8.3, 18.8. According to UZR, he's like Andrelton Simmons with a bat.
Jesus. Look, man, I got to watch Mexico win. Thanks for having me on, James.
Always a pleasure.
Every time, man. Hey, next time you want to make a bunch of inside jokes on a podcast that you have to heavily edit, just let me know.
Will do.
Bye.